This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Hello, good evening and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg with your Thursday evening edition of the BizNews briefing. The last one for the week. And we got a chock-a-block show for you. Let's kick off with the markets and see how they performed today. Hopefully your favorite stocks did well. There were a raft of company reports. I'll try and get through most of them for you. But the all-share index up by about a fifth of a percent. Resources were a little sluggish again. 1 1/5% lower. Industrials, around about 0.5% better. In financials, 1%. The rand, 13 cents stronger against the dollar at 18 rand, and 16 cents stronger against the pound at 22.76. But look at Bitcoin, up another 2.5% today, 96,751. We're going to hear from Rob Herzog later in the program, but in the premiere tonight at 8 o'clock on BizNews TV, Rob will be talking all about Bitcoin going to $1 million. It's way over $1 million already. $1 million. And lots more besides. And the gold price almost sluggish by comparison at just over $2,500. Some of those results today had big impacts. Mr. Price at a new high, up 8 1/3%. Reason for that? Well, the numbers that came out showed this is for the half year to the end of September, that revenue was up 5%. But that's real good in the market, because the market's revenue is only up 2.2. They get into such details with these companies nowadays. The margin there expanded by 110 basis points. That's 1%. That's pretty good stuff. And the headline earnings per share were up 6.5%. The market share for Mr. Price, 60 basis points improvement, and boy, did the retail analysts like that one. They also liked the numbers from SPAR. That was up by about 4%, and that's on a trading statement that came out from the company today. It told us that SPAR has now concluded its sale of the Polish operation, and it's cut its debt by 2 billion rand to 9 billion rand. If you exclude the Polish operation, which is now discontinued, then the headline earnings for the year to September, they say, is going to be between 16 and 26% higher. Market liked it. Purple, good old Purple Group, the owners of Easy Equities, up 3.5%. That's after a very brief trading update, said Purple will be returning to profit in the full year to end August. Those results coming out on Monday. And then Investec was up 1.2% today after its financial results were released to the end of September. That is the six-month numbers. Headlines there, operating profits were up 7.6%. Investec reports in British pounds, and they made £475 million in the six-month period. What analysts really liked about this was their cost-to-income ratio. Big story in banks was at 50.8%, and that's down by, significantly from 53.3%, and the return on equity around 14%, pretty good stuff if you are talking about pounds. Lewis, one of Piet Viljoen's favorites, took a bit of a knock today, down 5.5%. You'd wonder why, because the numbers were good. Headline earnings per share up 49%. Essentially, it must have been a little bit of inflated expectation from the market. That share price is up 83% this year so far. So a little bit of comeback. And then Reunert, which is in the BizNews portfolio, it was down on its full year results. Their group revenue is up 5%. Problem, I suppose, is that, we're all happy because load shedding's ended. Reunert not so happy because it hasn't been selling as many batteries as it was before then. But okay, Reunert, you can manage that. New highs, WeBuyCars keeps going stronger. Mr. Price, not surprising to see that one up. And Purple to get to a new high. This is a 12-month high. And then EOH has popped up there, up 6.8% today. New lows. Aspen down by about 0.5% to 170 Rand. And AB InBev, the new owners of SAB Miller, they were 0.75% down, and at one of the, well, their lowest point in the past 12 months. Let's get into our top story now. And man, did I have a lovely discussion today with Pick n Pay Chief Executive Sean Summers. He's such great value, Ed. He really is a superb communicator. And with him in the studio was Boxer CEO Marek Mazayada. Yeah, it's a difficult word, a difficult surname to pronounce, but he's a veteran at Boxer, and I got a pretty good feeling listening to the two of them about what Boxer's going to be. The reason we've put so much emphasis on Boxer is our retail specialist, Evan Walker from 361, says that this is going to be one of those stocks that you can put in your portfolio and forget about. Top share, he reckons. And listening to both Sean and Marek, you get the feeling that they know exactly what they're doing, and this is a company that is headed for the stars. I asked Sean, though, if there was any way that Pick n Pay couldn't have just kept Boxer. It's such a good company, and we're getting such good reports on it. Why did Boxer have to be spun off in the first place?
You've got to be realistic about these things as well and ask yourself, well, what are the chances of actually restoring Pick n Pay to its rightful place? It is still an extraordinarily loved brand in this country, and that is why we have such pockets of excellence across the business. But unfortunately, we have some other pockets where things have really fallen behind, stores have been underinvested in, and where we haven't kept up to pace. We haven't kept up to pace in terms of the management and leadership teams across the length and breadth of the country. And as the company has debilitated over these years and has gone about reducing the expense and overhead in order to try and survive, well, it's lost its momentum. And we all know in business that momentum ultimately is your friend. And without momentum, you cannot save your way back into prosperity or into safety. So what we've done in terms of the Boxer listing and the portion that we will list a Boxer is we've worked out what we need to take off the table to achieve what it is that we have in our business plan that we shared in May this year, and to be able to achieve that, yet still have a controlling stake in Boxer, still be a part and parcel of Boxer's future growth, which is going to be extraordinary, and still to be able to walk a journey with them. But I think from a Boxer perspective, and we can talk to Marek a bit more about this just now, you know, when I was given the task of having to go last December and sit down with Marek and tell him life's about to change, buddy, I said to him, no, Marek, in a way, it's actually poetic justice because Boxer so deserves its own place in the sunshine. I mean, it has grown into this extraordinary business from sort of just under 40 stores when we bought it from them 22 years ago, and Marek was CFO and Hugh was the then MD. And if you have a look at how Boxer has just grown on its own and into this beautiful business that it is today, it's actually justice that this team should really sort of stand up and take its own place in the sun.
So you're a Boxer man, Marek, rather than a Pick n Pay man.
Absolutely, Alec. I have done 31 years at Boxer, you know, joined the business when we had just 5 stores. We were known as the Zululand Cowboys. So literally, you know, seeing the business grow each step of the way. I mean, going back to 2002 when we met Sean for the first time as CEO, you know, this was a real eye-opener for us. You know, we were a small regional business with 30-odd stores, mainly in KZN and the Eastern Cape. And yes, every 5 years, this business seems to, you know, change completely. You know, people have asked me, how do you stay for 31 years? But it really is a different company every 5 years. We've evolved the model substantially from those early trading days and trading stores up in Empangeni in the main. It's been a real adventure along the way, and you know, certainly, you know, a company that's full of entrepreneurial spirit.
And one other thing, I want to speak about culture. So here we are next week. We're going to be having this awesome occasion on Thursday where Boxer is now going to be in the JSE and they're going to blow the kudu horn and everybody who's been a part and parcel of this process. As I say, our extensive and expensive advisors, of which there have been many in this process, all want to be there as part and parcel of this. And they were busy lining up a wonderful banquet for Thursday evening and a massive celebration to mark this occasion. And the reply from Marek and his team was very simple. No, guys, we'll have a little cocktail party on Wednesday evening. We'll blow the horn on Thursday, and then we will be out of there because we're going to stores Thursday afternoon because Friday is Black Friday. We ain't got time for dinners. And that comes to the culture of the company.
It is one risk, though, from a pick and pay perspective that I'd like you to address, a little bit like potentially the NASPAS risk, the NASPAS situation, where NASPAS is worth less than its investment in Tencent. If Boxer is as successful as we are believing or hearing about, is that not a potential risk for pick and pay, that you'll kind of lag behind and that Boxer would go forward and eventually your market value at pick and pay will be a discount to that of what your shareholding in Boxer is?
Well, I mean, if you have a look at the reality of that, Pat, you know, when I returned at the end of last year and we had a look at the numbers, and then it became apparent that we would have to look at listing Boxer in order to get ourselves out of the hole that we were in, for lack of a better term. I shared with the board that at that stage, that pick and pay bare naked, which is what it would be, once we gave the disclosure of Boxer and it was hived off, so to speak, the pick and pay wouldn't be looking particularly attractive for a while. But be that as it may, you know, it is what it is. And it's the reality. And, you know, the truth in life always sets you free and it makes things much, much simpler. So we know exactly what our realities are. It's just that other people are finding out about it now. So for some people in the market, they sit there now. I mean, a few weeks ago, you know, there was a negative valuation of pick and pay of sort of 10 to 15 odd billion. And you'd ask yourself, well, I mean, could pick and pay ever be worth negative 10 to 15 billion or 9 billion? Well, it's narrowed a bit now because the share has done particularly well in the last little while. But I mean, there's still a hefty negative equity in pick and pay that's currently imputed. And that's because the market just won't put a value on it. So, you know, the conundrum facing everybody in the moment, and we were at the SA CEO two-day investor round show, round robin show in London last week. Marek, you'll be on that next year as well, no doubt. A lot of fun being interviewed hour after hour after hour by people that have got more questions than there are answers. It's bloody marvelous. Well, at least we got to go to Twickenham on Saturday and have a great outcome there. But, you know, what happens at the end of the day, and the question is what is the value of pick and pay post this process? And, you know, how is it that pick and pay gets out of its current situation it's in? When does that trajectory turn around? When does it move back into profit? And, you know, those are all of the challenges that we currently face and deal with on a day-to-day basis.
We got a double header again for you tonight, and the double-headed premiere. At 7 o'clock, you can see that full interview with Sean Summers and Marek Mosayada. It really is well worth watching. Boxer is going to be something you're going to hear a lot about in future. And, well, wonderful communications, communicator rather, is Sean Summers. So is the one and only Rob Herzog. Now, Rob Herzog, a couple of years ago, stood up at the Biz News conference in the Drakensberg, and he told it like it was. That the recording of that video has been watched more than 500,000 times, which is pretty hectic stuff if you consider the number of people you have to put together to make up that many. But he's now got some pretty strong views about what is going on in the world generally. And I posed to Rob today in our interview, and this is the second part of our double header this evening, a second premiere. This is at 8 o'clock you can get Rob Herzog. So you can go and sit in front of your TV at on YouTube, Biz News TV on YouTube. At 7 o'clock you can watch Sean and Marek. At 8 o'clock you can watch Rob Herzog. And I asked Rob about the fact that California leads America and America leads the world. And in California, it's still very much the Democrats that are ruling there. So what is that telling us about the supposed New World Order that he and others are talking about?
I don't think California leads America anymore. There's no way any American state wants to import the Californian ideologies to their states. People are leaving California for the red pill states, Florida and Texas, in droves. Newsom's done it. It's a disaster, California. It's a disaster. It's not leading America anymore. No. Trump's going to start moving his businesses out of Los Angeles, and more, you know, important and powerful people will leave California for more red pill states. As is happening in the world, you know, Germany, at long last, after being a pathetic laggard, is going to elect a business-friendly government at last. The world is changing, and it's changing for the better. This is a great new era ahead of us. And in addition to that, if I can go straight into the world order, you know, Russia is desperately weak. The fact that Ukraine could invade the Kursk region without any opposition means anyone can invade Russia. And if Russia gets into a fight with America, Russia will last 30 seconds. America will absolutely flatten them. America is by far the strongest superpower militarily, economically, and technologically. And this is the technology era now. America's going to win for the next 12 years. China is having a hangover. I think China militarily is still the greatest threat to humanity right now over the next 10 years. Because as their economy starts to slow down, and it is slowing down, all their social ills, all their environmental ills, all the destruction they've created in society is going to manifest itself in a we need to get militarily more aggressive. They've been unable to expand land on their land mass. They've destroyed all their own natural resources, so they're short of natural resources. I think China's the main threat to humanity and peace. And Trump knows that. So he wants to solve Ukraine as quickly as possible. He wants to sort out the Middle East. And let me get to those two separately, if I may, and then focus on China, because that's where the threat's coming. But America is head and shoulders stronger than China and anyone else.
Rob, before we go into the detail, and I'm looking forward to that, where do you get your information from? I know you've traveled around the world. You are a global businessman. You went to Harvard. You did an MBA there. You've been working in the very, very top area, both when you trained and when you have been running businesses. But where do you get your information that you're so freely sharing with the rest of us?
From BizNews. No, I do. I devour BizNews media. But I also get a lot of my information from friends, prominent business people across mainly Americans. And a lot of the podcasters, the American podcasters. Funnily enough, this is a topic that I last night thought I'd love to bring up, because I got into a bit of an argument with my mother-in-law, who's a New Zealander, is a fantastic woman. She's a bit of a lefty. And lefties focus on feelings, righties focus on facts. So we always win. I'm just joking. And I said to her, she said, I'm in an echo chamber. And I go, you know, I follow Ben Shapiro, Jordan Peterson, Douglas Murray, you know, I can go on and on and on. Constantine Kissam, superb. And I devour those podcasts. So I'm in an echo chamber that's center, capitalist, alt-right, whatever you want to call it. And I asked her, I said, you know, I'll make an effort to listen to your side of the story. Won't you suggest some lefty podcasters that aren't just one-trick ponies, that don't just talk about climate change or talk about some woke ideology? Can't you give me some left-wing podcasters that are intelligent, deep, have a broad, you know, topics of discussion, and have a sense of humor, some character? Well, it took a while for her to send me some names. And then I went out on some WhatsApp groups and asked for other suggestions. Very few people came back with any. And that amazed me. So I think the left are living off mainstream media, you know, BBC, Guardian, MSN, NBC, ABC, those sort of things, because there's no intellectual basis to what they're saying. Most of their arguments could be destroyed by facts. No, there are two genders. Fact, end of story. There goes that whole nonsense trans debate and women in sport debate. You know, we base our arguments on fact. And the podcasters on the right or in the center where I am are vastly superior intellectually, charismatically, if such a word exists, and they have a sense of humor. And then I'll flip onto stand-up comedy. Find me one left-wing comic that's funny. There isn't one.
Well, Rob Herzhoff was really on fire in that conversation today. It's going to premiere on the Biz News channel on YouTube at 8 o'clock tonight. It's well worth absorbing. Really fascinating. He talks about Helen Ziller. He talks about Gayton McKenzie, South Africa, Iran, you name it. It's a free-flowing, as you can see, conversation, and he is a wonderful communicator. Well, another South African who's in the global environment, not really that well known here yet, is Andre Pienaar from C5 Capital. Andre used to be a member of the Scorpions, so he comes with pretty strong credentials. But C5 Capital's now got more than $500 million in assets under management, and it has just today secured a very close relationship with Sibanye-Stillwater. I caught up with Andre. Again, the full interview is available on, or will be available in a little while, on the BizNews YouTube channel. But let's listen in here to exactly what Andre is hoping to achieve.
Yes, the price of uranium has gone up very considerably, about 233% over the last 2 years. It currently trades at just above $80 on the spot market. And given how constrained this market is becoming because of a whole range of factors, rising demand because of the demands for clean energy by artificial intelligence, the number of nuclear plants that are under construction worldwide, and then on the other hand, geopolitics, which are constraining supply, I think there's a lot of scope for the price of uranium to grow further and to increase further. And that, of course, will increase the profitability of uranium mining and enable assets that were previously not considered viable to become viable again.
But I guess with the assets that Neil Froneman has in his portfolio now, he doesn't need to go underground.
No, just he give doesn't.
Give us an understanding, if you would, of how much uranium is in those those old gold dumps or that was mined in the past as a byproduct of the gold mining.
Between the two assets he has, the Cook mine and the Beatrix mine, is about 60 million ton, which is a very considerable amount of uranium. And as you say, it's on the surface, doesn't require deep level mining, and so therefore these tailing dumps can be mined very cost efficiently.
So is that part of this whole project between the two of you, that you will find the offtake and he will do the production?
Well, we are investing across all of the nuclear value chain. So we invest all the way from raw uranium through to the nuclear fuel cycle, through to advanced nuclear reactors, through to nuclear applications like nuclear medicine, and all the way through to nuclear fusion. And within the scope of those investments, the different investments we have on our portfolio, there's very significant demand for raw uranium product and for having secure and cost-efficient supply. And in a market where the prices in the spot market are rising and supply is getting constrained, having a partner like Sibanye, who is developing a world-class uranium division and has two ready assets, could in the future be really valuable.
Fascinating man. And it is a really interesting interview. So I suggest that you go along and have a look at it. There's quite a bit there as well about the proposed South African nuclear deal with Jacob Zuma and Putin's involvement there. He doesn't hold back, does Andre? Onto the international scene now. And last night we told you that NVIDIA's results were coming out. Well, they shot the lights out, but the market wasn't that enthused, believe it or not. Double your sales nowadays, and it's not enough. Let's pop into our partners at Bloomberg, who spoke to Dan Ives. He's the managing director and senior equity analyst at Wedbush Securities. And as you will hear, he is one of the big NVIDIA bulls.
You're known to be one of the big bulls in the market. Are you happy with this set of results that were put forward by the company? A few people are picking up on the fact that their estimates for Q4 were perhaps slightly more muted than what some analysts had been hoping for.
Yeah, I think it's a champagne moment. I mean, this is a stock I think that's going to be ultimately up tomorrow. Look, I think what this just shows, this AI revolution, it is still in the early days of playing out. And that's why the godfather of AI, Jensen NVIDIA, continue to drive this market. And I think this is something tech bulls come away from this feeling more and more, I think, emboldened going into a tech rally into year end, into next year, led by NVIDIA. We think $4 trillion on the doorstep.
Let me just ask you about Blackwell specifically. They point to some of the manufacturing challenges that have slowed the rollout. And again, it seems as though demand is going to massively outpace their ability to provide these chips to the market. So is that not going to pose a bit of a dampener to the stock in the near term because it's also going to eat away at margins?
Yeah, look, I think right now demand to supply is 15 to 1. And that's this is so unprecedented. But if you look at that call, no overheating issues, everything we've seen from our check show production, and the ramp's going to even be quicker than expected. But to give numbers, Street originally was thinking let's call it $2 billion per quarter, maybe $3 billion. This is probably going to be closer to $7, $8, now potentially $10 billion per quarter as it all run rates. What that basically just shows, we're going to be sitting here a year from now, Jensen's still wearing the black leather jacket, and I think this is an NVIDIA that can now start to go toward $4-4.5 trillion, and I think along with Apple, we'll break these thresholds.
Wow. You started off by saying $4 trillion. By the way, NVIDIA is the most valuable company on earth. It has a market cap of around $3 trillion at the moment. It started off at four and suddenly it became 4.5. Well, and the other big story that's making headlines around the world is the Indian billionaire and business leader Gautam Adani, who was last night our time, indicted by the American Department of Justice for a 250 million rand bribe that he and others have paid. Again, let's go to Bloomberg. And here we're going to hear from Bloomberg's legal enterprise reporter, Patricia Hurtado.
So, Patricia, this has obviously been in the works for a while. What do we know?
Well, we saw a stunning indictment that was unsealed today against Mr. Gautam Adani and seven other businessmen related to his companies. It's amazing because it spans India to the United States, and it alleges that Gautam Adani paid and his associates paid more than $250 million in bribes to Indian government officials. So that's a domestic action that happens there to obtain lucrative solar energy contracts with the Indian government. But then it's alleged that to market it, he also later sell off certain bonds and loans to U.S. investors, which is the nexus of how the United States gets into this. So, and then there's an allegation that when the U.S. government came calling to make inquiries, four of the co-defendants of Mr. Gautam Adani basically destroyed evidence and are now charged with obstruction of justice when the FBI and the Justice Department came calling.
So where did they come calling, and where did this alleged crime actually take place?
Well, apparently there may have been some discussions with U.S. investigators. It doesn't say exactly where the questioning happened, but it sounds like it was tied to the U.S. issuer's board of directors. So there's a fraud scheme that was involved, tied to the New York Stock Exchange issuers. There was transactions that were investors bought into Adani-related loans, and that were marketed on the stock exchange in a company called Adani Green. And it seems like there's another company involved. So it's quite stunning because it goes from India to the United States.
And in terms of the bribes that are claimed to have been paid, how much money are we talking about here?
We're talking at least $250 million paid to Indian officials, as well as multi-million dollars of, in the other scheme. They did these things, for example, they did PowerPoint presentations where they kept track of their bribes, and they communicated with each other in WhatsApp presentations and messages, which they tried to delete, but the U.S. government got copies of. So it seems like they have a trove of evidence that they've managed to amass. On the downside, none of these people are in custody, and it's unclear whether the Indian government would ever move to extradite them to the United States to face prosecution.
What a story. It just shows that the long arm of the American law will reach very deeply. I guess some people at MTN might be feeling a bit nervous now, given that they are being sued on similar charges. This has been the BizNews Briefing for today. It's my pleasure to thank you on behalf of our team of technical producer, Ruan Erasmus, our executive producer, Lucy Ferreira, and the whole team at BizNews who contribute to put this program together. Well done, guys. You really hit it out the park this week. We'll be back again on Monday. My colleague Bronwyn Nielsen in the saddle. Until then, cheerio. This BizNews Briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.